This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, we're back with Place to Be Nation's WrestleMania weekend wrap-up show. Again, this is Brad Willing. I have Greg Phillips, Ben Morrison, and now I'm going to play, if he had entrance music, we would play it now. But here comes Andrew Reich. Good God, it's Andrew Reich's music, and we're going to talk about WrestleMania, the event. Andrew, you made it down in your hometown. Talk to me about the atmosphere outside the stadium. Did you do anything in the parking lot or kind of take in any of the grandeur going on?
We got in there at around 2 o'clock. I live in Mandeville, which is about 40 to 50 miles away from where all the action is in the quarter. And we drove on down. You have to go across Lake Pontchartrain to get there. And we did. I got some free parking thanks to a connection at a hotel right off of Carondelet and another street that called Common Street, and it was called the Renaissance Paramarquette. Very nice, fancy hotel. Probably one of those hotels that either the small-time wrestlers or independent wrestlers from other promotions were probably staying at the time. And I got some free parking there, and it's literally not even two blocks away from Canal Street. Now, Canal Street and Carondelet is the corner where when you go over Canal, that is Bourbon Street. That is where you see every single movie where New Orleans and something's going on. That's Bourbon Street. And we took a walk, and the first thing I noticed, you know, leading into going the other way to Poitras Street, which is where the Superdome is, walking the quarter down Bourbon, my brother David, it was just so inundated with wrestling fans. And I was kind of taking the assumption that there might be some wrestling fans, but there's probably just a lot of people just down there to kind of just get drunk and be stupid. Well, I go down there, and it is, Brett, I'm not even kidding. It was so full of wrestling fans that I couldn't believe it. I felt like I was at a wrestling Mardi Gras. It was ridiculous. They had people dressed like Randy Savage. Randy Savage was the coup de grace. Everybody wanted to dress like the Macho Man. All these Ric Flair people. One guy says woo, and they all say woo, like all the way clear across the Harrah's Casino. And I texted a few people. I was able to get in touch with Greg and Nick Duke, and we got to do a meetup right there at the corner of Canal and Bourbon, and we just kind of did a powwow for about a good 20 to 25 minutes, I'd say. And then we walked a little ways downward, going away from the Superdome, just to walk Bourbon, because Bourbon Street goes a very long ways. It goes up to, I think, about 2 or 3 miles past that, and saw some really crazy things, like people as Power Rangers with Yes t-shirts, and every Bray Wyatt impersonator that you can think of, and
all the weird Bray Wyatt guys that or Wyatt family guys that you took a picture with that walked by us while we were chatting it up.
Yeah, they were funny because I was asking him. He was trying to keep in character, but he was doing a bad job because his goat mask was broken, you know. And so I'm doing a Don Rickles on him where I'm just trying to break him so he can laugh or something,
because
he
had his girlfriend. Broken.
Yeah, he had a girlfriend. He had a girlfriend with him that didn't have a mask. So I'm asking him questions like, "Where are you from?" He's like, "I'm from the land of lost souls," or some stupid Bray Wyatt shit. And I said, "Oh, really? Are you from Louisiana, like Bray Wyatt?" And he nods, like slow nod, like Michael Myers nod. And I said, "Oh, cool. Well, I'm from St. Bernard, which is St. Bernard Parish is the parish that I grew up in." And then all of a sudden he leans over to me. He goes, "I'm from Metairie," which is a suburb city, which is about 10 miles westward. So, you know, I got to talk to them and, you know, kind of hang shit about Louisiana residents and all that stuff. Took a picture with them, had fun with a couple of other people who were dressed. It was so funny because we have a lot of our French Quarter celebrities, like the Naked Cowboy and Black Moses, and guy who's like a big-time Saints fan. And you see all these people and you try to meet up with them and take a picture, but it's really, really cool cool to see all these different people dressed like different wrestlers and different personalities and just really, really random things, like something like fucking Kamala, you know, just walk in the French Quarter and just, hey, can I take a picture with you? Oh, yeah, sure. And then, you know, there you go. So we did that in the quarter, walked down Poydras at about 3:30, and it was a good, decent walk over there. And once we got to the Superdome, it was pretty pleasant if you went to the main entrance. If you went to the side entrance near Champion Square, which is on the ends of the Superdome, you were probably in a little bit of trouble because that area has less gate openings. So it got really, really super clumped up, a lot of ticket scalpers, so we got the hell out of there. And we went to the front area, which is where everybody walks through. If you see a camera shot, that's where everybody's walking. And you know, I took it all in and took pictures and said hi to a few people who were dressed like different people or had funny signs or whatnot. And you know, it was a pretty easy way into the dome, because unlike other WrestleManias, this WrestleMania opened their gates, I want to say, at about 4:00 or
wow,
maybe 4:20.
Okay.
It very early because the pre-show
oh, yeah,
was inside of the Superdome. It wasn't outside, which is what I was anticipating. So they opened the gate very, very early. I want to say it was around 4:00, 4:30, because it was a good 30 minutes I was into that building when they started the pre-show, and the pre-show started at 5:30. Hmm. You know, so it was the atmosphere was pretty amazing. When they open the gates to WrestleMania, or you get that anticipation, like, I'm finally getting in, I'm going to be at WrestleMania, like, it's almost like you get butterflies in your stomach, like a big-time athlete in a big-time game, like, oh, man, it's here, the moment's here. And, you know, I got that feeling in Houston for WrestleMania 25 when I did it for the first time. But, you know, being that it's in the Superdome, something that I used to, like, buy postcards of, because I've been down here my whole life. They've only really had two big time shows in the dome, some Mid-South wrestling shows and Clash of the Champions in 1989,
right,
when Flair wrestled Steamboat in the Iron Man match,
or
sure, two out of three falls match. So not a lot of Superdome shows, a lot at the arena, which is right across from the Superdome, but not in the dome itself. So to just have this feeling like, wow, the big show is here and we're gonna get into the dome and watch this, it was such an amazing feeling. And then when I got in there, I haven't been in the Superdome since 2000. That was,
wow,
when the Saints beat the Rams, back,
yeah,
when Jim Haslett was there in a wild card game. So I hadn't even seen the Superdome since it was re-beautified after the horrific events at Hurricane Katrina. So I was kind of anticipating, okay, it's going to look a lot different than I remembered it. And boy, did it. And it looks great. It smells great. Air conditioning's fantastic. It looks like every football stadium, every new built football stadium that you could think of, like MetLife and Reliant Stadium, but it just feels so much tighter and so much closer knit because it's an old-time building, because it was built in the 70s, but it's got all the suites, it's got all the amenities, it just feels special. It
nice.
Does. And I know I'm a homer, but maybe Ben and Greg will talk about it more, but
and
it felt special.
You're not that
added
much of a homer
too,
if you hadn't been there in that long. So, Greg, how about you? How was your experience there at the Bourbon Street and whatnot in those areas before you made your way in?
We had actually just gotten there, and I think we went and grabbed a bite to eat maybe, or stopped off at this really fancy mall that was not on Bourbon Street, but like in the French Quarter, not far from it. And it was like everything in the mall was like really upscale clothing stores. There was literally like nothing else but upscale clothing stores and a really nice theater where they actually serve you food and stuff, where we watched Captain America: The Winter Soldier.
Oh.
Available in theaters now.
Yeah, in 3D and IMAX.
That's right. We watched it there and it was wonderful. We walked up and met up with Andrew and his brother, and that was fun. Ran into a lot of the WrestleMania cosplayers. We saw Nakeem, which was really cool.
Very cool. We saw one of those at the Rumble also.
And of course, we had to, after we left Andrew, we had to kind of book it back to our car because Nick had to change into his Hulk Hogan costume, which involved the the bald cap, the hair, the fake mustache, the leggings, much to my chagrin, the weight belt and all that stuff. So we were walking to the dome. Literally dozens of people stopped Nick to take pictures with him.
You have to have pictures of him in this getup.
Oh yeah, yeah, we've got plenty of pictures as far as I know.
And I like how matter of fact it was that, you know, we had to go back to the car because of course Nick had to get this whole program.
Yeah, I love the idea that Nick has to save it. Like, I can't dress now. I have to get into my phone booth and do it.
Yeah, it was very much like a Clark Kent turning into Superman routine. Like he vanished off into the garage, and the rest of us just kind of stood watch to make sure nobody saw him getting into costume. And then he decked out in the feather boas. He had like five feather boas of different colors and everything. It was incredible. But as we made the walk, we had a lot. It was really cool. There were a lot of little kids and stuff that would come up to Nick and want to take pictures with him and stuff. And that was kind of cool. And as we were walking into the dome amidst the big crowd of people, we were up on the front row of the third level, the 315 section, I think. And so we were going up on the ramp outside the dome, and I got to take a picture with a guy dressed as the Hitman, which was kind of cool. And he had actually driven all the way from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, which I can imagine is one hell of a drive.
Was he the one with the gauze downstairs?
I'm not sure.
They had a guy in the quarter, and he had no shirt on, and he had the Bret Hart shades, and it was clear that he was wearing his tights way, 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 way too tight. And I was like, I was like, man, I gotta find Greg, but he's already gone.
Yeah, no, this guy had the full singlet and everything, and had I believe he had the jacket too. He may not have had the jacket, I can't remember, and had like the wig that looked more like Howard Stern hair than Bret Hart hair, but it was that was actually. Funnily enough, when we sat down in our seats, we were in the front row of the third section, so we could peer down. And below us, we saw that guy sit down right in the section below us. And with him was his friend, who was cosplayed as Owen, which was kind of cool. So
oh, that's awesome.
So that was a fun little experience.
Nice. Ben, how about yourself?
Again, I had a little different experience because I was going in as press. So we went. There was one parking lot that was designated only for press, so we went in there, used our credentials, and then got to go in kind of like a side door through the garage. I don't even know how to describe it. Got taken up a few levels and taken to a press conference that we didn't know was going to happen. So, of course, you know, at this point, it's like it's Sunday. We're kind of like we're done with work. We're just there to be fans now, so we're not, you know, thinking about doing anything. We're just kind of like, okay, I guess we'll just sit and do this. And it was pretty cool. It was we were just set up, and it was just for people from various press outlets to ask questions of the people who spoke. We just sat there and enjoyed it, and we got to hear Hulk Hogan came out for 10 minutes and talked. It was in a very small room. There couldn't have been more than 20 or 30 people there from the press.
Okay.
Hulk Hogan spoke, told some great stories. Favorite story was someone asked him where he came up with calling people brother. And he talked about how he meets so many people every day and he's good with faces, but he's not good with names. So he worked into his lexicon just brother. So he's like, all 500 people I've met this weekend, they've all been brother.
That's pretty cool.
So he says that's why he does it. He did about 10 minutes. Stephanie came out and did about 10 minutes. She was really well spoken, really articulate. It was just the beginning of me actually being a big fan of hers that night. And then finally, John Cena came out, and Cena was great. Cena's always great with the press. And he's always, you know, just great in general as you see it, stuff like this, why he's the face of the company. Because he's the one who can kind of represent and really conduct himself well.
Sure.
But the best part of that was, you know, they said everyone's gonna be out for 10 minutes. He gets to about 10 minutes and Hogan and Steph had both done like little spiels and then answered a few questions. Cena just comes right out and he goes, all right, you don't need to hear anything from me. Let's go to questions, and answers lots of questions. And then the woman who was running the whole thing, every time they were coming up, she'd be last question. And they'd go on. So she just goes to Cena, last question. And he goes, maybe. And then he proceeded to take about 15 more questions after that. So, and she, you could see the look on her face. She wanted to kill him. I don't know if there were other people who were supposed to come out or what was going on, but he went for about 25 minutes and just went to the end of the whole thing. It was very funny. He talked about it was a good mix of questions. Actually, no one asked really dumb questions, but someone asked about him getting just kind of the build to the Wyatt mask, and he said, you know, it was just weird the other week. I'm suddenly tied up in the ropes and don't even have my safe word. And then suddenly I had a goat mask on and it was feeling even more familiar, but that's enough about my personal life. Like, you know, just rolling stuff off like that. And it was a lot of fun. And then from there, and this is just totally unexpected. I thought we were going to go and go straight to the press box, but they take us like, all right, we're going to take you guys to the press box. We're taking the elevator, and they walk us through the backstage area. And I'm, you know, watching Total Divas, I'm like, oh, wow, this is the backstage area from – I don't think this is the backstage area from WWE. You'll like this, Brad. I just say, oh, it's the backstage area from Total Divas.
Sure.
That's because that's the only place it exists.
Did you see the seamstress lady?
That was – I said to my friend, I go, if we see the seamstress from Total Divas, I'm going to lose my shit.
Oh,
like, I can't be a professional anymore. But no, we're just sitting there waiting in line because they're taking an elevator up to the press box where there's like 20 of us and they can only get a couple people in at a time. So we're sitting there and like people are just coming by on golf carts. Michelle McCool came by on a golf cart that someone was driving. Just random other people. Ryback was walking around in his tights because he was getting ready for the pre-show match. Bruce Clay rolled by. So it was pretty cool. I was just like, oh man, this is really good. We're right by catering. I was like, let's just stay here. Like,
yeah.
Forget the show. But then, we got the ride up to the press box, and the press box was amazing. We got catering, which was great. Got a little goodie bag, or like a T-shirt and a hoodie and a hat and the official program. And yeah, we were way, way high up. We were on the 7th level, but you know, we had the TVs all around us. We could actually hear the commentary, which is kind of cool. I was telling Andrew about this when we met up. Mm-hmm. But like we could watch the show and actually hear the commentary, which is very unique for being so live.
Just to give a little bit of background for where Ben was, every dome, every stadium has their own kind of unique sort of property to it. When you look at it like visually, the Georgia Dome has that kind of like build up at the very tippy top of the dome, kind of looks like a glass structure, and you know the Rose Bowl is just this big giant bowl of people with no balconies, just rampways. The Superdome has like this sort of a lining into their upper bowl where the crowd seating kind of dips like a hill, and you see these little lines, and that's what they call the terrace. And where I think Ben was seated, maybe he can confirm it or deny it, I'm not sure, but I think he was in the skybox above the terrace, which is facing exactly opposite to the entryway.
No, we were on the side. I was like to the side of the entryway.
You were to the side of the entryway, so
yeah.
were you between the balconies, or were you way up in the air?
I think we were higher up than the balconies.
You were higher up than the balconies, so the skybox must roll around.
Right.
But the terrace is one of those kind of things where if you look at the WrestleMania telecast back, you can easily see it if someone goes to the top rope, those little lines with the crowd going downward. That's the terrace, and that's where, like when they have the field goal posts, the field goal post goes right where the terrace is because it's exactly perpendicular to the rampway. So, you know, but what he's saying is that he was way, way high in the air. But I've heard from people in terrace seating that it's a great seat because
absolutely.
You can see everything.
Yep.
Nothing is hit.
Yeah, we had a great view. And, we had the sound. We had no problem. It was awesome. And I, echoing what Andrew was saying, like, I loved the Superdome. I was really impressed. It was a great place to watch the match. You know, obviously, I love seeing it at MetLife, but I was a little spoiled this year having a roof. Definitely am a big fan of that, especially in the middle of March or April. So that was pretty cool. But, the last cool thing up there was as we were watching the matches, you know, the press guys were bringing up. There's a lot of NXT talent up there watching. Sami Zayn was up there for a little bit. They would pop in and out. But at one point, we're watching, I think it was when Cena Wyatt was starting, and someone comes up behind him and puts a hand on my shoulder, a hand on my buddy's shoulder, just goes, how are you boys liking the matches? And we turn around, it's Sergeant Slaughter. And we're like, whoa.
Wow.
That is pretty cool. And he's, we're like, oh, we're really enjoying him. He sat there and just talked to us. Maybe he's like, how about that opening? That was pretty cool, huh? Don't see that often. I was like, yeah.
Shoving clean. Is that what he meant?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
He says, are you ready to see this puke Daniel Bryan?
Yeah.
That's a Sarge is up there entertaining. Yeah, that's fantastic. So
that's great.
It was right after his vignette too, where
Danny Davis
Slim City stuff.
So like 11 year old
from there to us.
So your inner 11 year old was probably like wanting to mark out constantly.
Yep, and trying to be like, oh yeah, nice to see you, Sarge. I see you. Really just wanting to go like, ah, Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh, the backstage area,
yeah, exactly. The backstage area. I can't believe I kept it together. I was so ready. Like,
you should have just stolen like a devil food cake or something that they had down there if they had it.
Yeah, it was a struggle to keep my composure, but it was a dream, man. I gotta say, like, WWE treated us really well. The WWE PR team all weekend treated us great.
Yeah, and I don't want to get uber nerdy, but, you know, because everybody, all the sets of WrestleMania are amazing. It's hard to really discern, oh, I like that one more than the other. But I will say this, I don't know how it came off to everybody else watching it live, but the lighting and kind of the color tones inside of the building were amazing. The way that they kind of set every color atmosphere differently from section to section to section. It just had a really really unique feel compared to other WrestleManias, especially the outdoors ones, because it's harder to light and color up all the seating sections when you don't have any spotlights above you. Well, they did that and then some here.
And I'll tell you this, we saw 27 in the Georgia Dome and 30 in the Superdome, obviously. But having been to 24 in Orlando and 28 in Miami, one thing that I loved about this year's WrestleMania in terms of the set, it was a beautiful set, it was awesome, but it did not get in the way of anybody seeing the action, which was wonderful, because in Orlando they had those stupid palm trees, which they had to do because the Citrus Bowl is a dump, so they had to do something to make it look good. And at 28 they had, I can't remember exactly what the set was. But
the fake palm trees around the ring posts.
Yes, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's
right.
Really long entrance. It was like a long, it wasn't a big entrance, it was a long entrance.
And those, you know, it wasn't bad for us. We could see fine, but it was unfortunate because there were some people that paid really good money for seats and had their view obstructed and had to look at the screen.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case this year at the Superdome.
And all those people got out of it was they got free Raw tickets when they came back to town 6 months later, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, the cool thing, too, is that if it's not outdoors, you don't need the covering, which means you don't need four pillars. And those four pillars can obstruct the view way easier than the Superdome. And also, they like to do the fireworks twice when it's outdoors, once in the daytime to start the show, and then in the middle of the show when it night falls, because it looks a lot cooler. So it was actually a little bit better off this way, because you can just get it all out of the way early and just let's get on with the show. And that's kind of, we'll get now, I guess we could segue that into the show itself, but it really felt like they didn't waste any time. They didn't really say, okay, we're gonna just self-masturbate on this thing and this thing and this thing. No, they just went straight to the show, and they did not bother wasting your time.
Yeah, and so that was one of the questions that Scott wanted me to ask. First off, real quick on the fireworks, he used that point as a negative to New Orleans because you couldn't have the big fireworks, and then you guys shot fireworks off inside anyway. But no America the Beautiful, no pageantry or anything like that before the show started?
None.
That was
weird. There was no America the Beautiful.
That's really weird.
The America the Beautiful stood out to me. The rest of it I could do without. Like, you know, I didn't need Vince coming out and saying, "Welcome to WrestleMania" or anything like that.
I would have liked that. I would have liked that.
You got Hulk Hogan to come out and do that, though. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I mean, I wanted Vince to come out, but I wanted him to come out as evil Mr. McMahon and get, you know, and have a confrontation with the three big stars that I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. But no, I was perfectly fine with the way they did it, but I did think the No America the Beautiful was kind of strange.
So it was rocking indoors here, and you could definitely tell watching at home. And I noticed one thing in particular, and we didn't talk about it. You guys didn't talk about any type of yes chance outside the arena, because being back at 28 when it was kind of boring.
I think we didn't mention it because it was sort of one of those like unconditional truth kind of things where they were fucking everywhere.
Yeah. Everywhere. Yeah.
All over the city, too. Yeah. Not just at WrestleMania. Like Richa, if you walk down Bourbon Street, there was just people starting yes chance at random places all over New Orleans.
If you exit by the West Bank just to kind of get around from block to block, you hear yes, yes, yes. People in out of their cars screaming it, you know?
Nice.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one thing I thought that, and I made some comments about it too, was that I felt like that once they announced the match, and even actually kind of post-Elimination Chamber, it seemed like, and it could have been the venues they were in, it seemed like the Yes Chants weren't as hearty as they were earlier in 2014, kind of when we were really pushing hard for him. But I tell you what, that was completely wiped out by the Mania crowd, because everybody was doing it. It was a great visual. It looked awesome on Daniel Bryan's special when they kind of showed some different camera angles of it. So it was obviously very loud inside for you guys too, and I'm sure they were very plentiful, but you guys got to kick it off. So talking about crowd reactions and whatnot, you know, Greg, let me start with you. So Hogan comes out, and Nick Duke faints into your arms.
Yes, and yes. I had to revive him several times.
You and Russell holds his feet up, and then yep. He gets the blood back. And then Stone Cold comes out. Big surprise for you guys?
Not a huge – well, it was a surprise. It was somewhat of a surprise that they would have – we knew Stone Cold was going to be there. We had no doubt about that. And we knew The Rock was going to be there because of he tweeted out a picture of him in New Orleans. We didn't know how they were going to be used. I thought Austin and Rock would do something together. I didn't think that it would involve Hogan. So when Hogan was wrapping up his promo and Austin's music hit, like Nick fainted again, and the entire crowd basically like lost their collective marbles, because here we had the two biggest stars of all time. And holy shit, they're finally going to go face-to-face and, like, be in the same ring at the same time, which I could be wrong, but other than the NWO angle in 02, this is probably the first time that's happened, where, like, Red and Yellow Hogan and Stone Cold sharing the ring together, and it just felt like this huge moment. And to start the show with it, the crowd went apeshit, and we were actually worried that it was going to burn the crowd out because – you know, and it was just such a huge reaction. Like, we were screaming our lungs out. Like, it was so cool. And then, as if that wasn't big enough, The Rock's music hits, and then I faint because, like, it was like, you know, I'm a huge Rock fan, and I had pretty much convinced myself before the weekend that I was not going to see him this year at Mania. So to see him actually confirm the rumors and show up, and then all of a sudden it hit the crowd, I think, at the same time. Holy shit, we're watching the three biggest stars in the history of pro wrestling. We're watching Hogan, Austin, and The Rock, the three biggest moneymakers, three biggest crossover stars in the ring, cutting promos at the same time. And that's when, if you watch the broadcast, and I hope this came across, I haven't watched it yet, but the whole crowd started chanting, "This is awesome," before The Rock even said a word.
Hmm.
Chanting, "This is awesome." Chanting, "This is awesome," for three guys standing in the ring. Just incredible.
It's quite a moment. Quite a moment. Andrew.
Oh, and The Rock was hilarious, by the way. That we were he had the whole crowd eating out of the palms.
His energy was phenomenal. It wasn't like phone it in energy. It was like legitimate, natural. I'm gonna blow the roof off this place energy.
Yeah, and he had every like I worried about what his reaction would be because so many of the wrestling fans like hold it against him that he left or whatever. But there was none of that. As soon as he came out, everybody turned into generic fanboy number one, right. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, that shows his staying power for sure. And I know he's friends with Hogan and Stone Cold too, so and he's always very humble, which I think is a very endearing characteristic of him in general. So that was an awesome moment for you guys. And then we got, you know, we're not going to go match by match, but, you know, I want to segue into, so Ben, you get the text that it's time, 6 months in the making, you're going to meet Andrew, so break it down for me.
Well, first of all, I sent him the text.
No, you received it.
I did not get the text. Received it? Okay. I received the text from myself that I was going to meet Andrew. Yeah, no, it was funny, like, going into the show, I made sure Andrew had my my number so we could meet up. And when I was in the hotel, I don't know if it was the day of or the night before. I think it was the night before when he texted me and said, forget the exact conversation. It was something like, hey, it's Andrew. And I think I replied back, I've made a horrible mistake.
Yeah, because like, I was doing it as a, I did it in the middle of the night as a test run to see if I was not texting some like farm animal in Aberdeen, Washington.
Yeah, no, that was my whole plan. You guessed it. But yeah, no, he texted me that, and I'm like, nah, I made a horrible mistake. Ah, just kidding. Good to see you. And then he called me on Sunday. We chatted for a little bit, and I actually, like, several times I was like, the thing was, I'm up in this skybox. I don't even know if I can get out. Like, I don't know if there's an exit.
Right.
I don't know if we just have to wait for them to escort us back because of, you know, security and this one elevator. So I go and ask, I just ask one of the security people. I'm like, hey, if I want to, you know, go down to the concourse or something, is there a way to do that? And he goes, yep, just use that one elevator. There's a woman, like, running the elevator. I just said, all right. And so I texted Andrew a few times because I didn't want to go out during something I actually wanted to watch. So I was trying to wait for, like, a lengthy video package or something.
And it was hard.
Yeah, it was tough because they just kept going. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, there were no dead segments, really.
No, it was all killer, no filler, as my friend Andy Hyline says.
Yeah, it was such a breakneck pace, and I kept looking for a time to duck out. I was going to go during Cena Wyatt because for some reason I wasn't that excited for that match. But then I was like, nah, I should stay and watch the match. I'm glad I did. And then once they started playing, once I knew that Taker Brock was coming up next, I was like, all right, well, between video packages and entrances, I figure I got a good 20 minutes here. So let's make this happen. So I texted Rich. I said, I'm coming down. He gave me his section number. And I go down. He said he's going to be outside. And he's you're at the Smoothie King stand?
Yeah, they had a Smoothie King kiosk right across us because Smoothie King just renamed the Newell Arena to the Smoothie King Center.
Yeah,
so they must have rebranded. Yeah, it's dumb. It is dumb.
Stupidest name for a stadium ever.
But I do love Smoothie King, so I went ahead and got seconds there.
Right.
And I said, well, I'll just wait for Ben because I'm not super jazzed about Brock Taker anyway, so this is a good time for me to just take a breather.
So I get down to like about – I didn't know where I was. So I went down like one level from the seventh, and I definitely had like many more levels to go. So I jumped on another elevator, and then I started jogging through the arena because I'm like, well, I don't want to miss too much. So I come up, I see Andrew getting his thing, say what's up. We hug, we say what's going on, I start talking to him. But this is my big thing is that I knew his brother was with him, but I didn't know what his brother looked like. So this guy. One of the guy working the Smoothie King kiosk comes over, and I didn't see his uniform initially, and I didn't see where he was coming from. So he comes over carrying a drink. So I just assume, oh, this is Andrew's brother. I'm gonna say hello. So I stick my hand out and go, hey man, I'm Ben. Really nice to meet you.
Yeah.
And it was just some dude who was buying a smoothie.
I had bought the smoothie about a good like maybe a couple minutes before Ben showed up. So they were getting it ready, and while we were in the conversation, because we talked for about a good 5 minutes, I guess the guy decided, oh, what the hell, I'll just give it to him so I can get out of this little junked up, you know, Smoothie King stand that I'm sitting at with all these five other employees so I can get my legs free. So he walked over and gave it to me, and I guess Ben took it as he was my brother. And then he started asking us questions about the show.
I opened the door, and, like, he started becoming part of the conversation for a little while.
It's
just, like, asking us stuff.
Huh.
And at this point, I saw his name tag, and I was like, oh, man, all right, just go away.
My brother
was your worst interview of the weekend.
Definitely.
My brother's a very inside person, so he was in his seat kind of having a migraine issue. So it's okay, you know. That's just how he is. He enjoyed the show, but I wasn't going to have him – I already drug him through freaking Bourbon Street. I wasn't going to drag the guy, you know, around me to the concourse. So, you know, I just went on my own. But yeah. I wanted to mention this before Ben finishes is that you know, for Ben, I don't want to say Ben's a big timer because he had the press credentials to do what he had to do. He's got the access. He can go backstage. You know, he has what he has to do. For him to take the effort during a show that's as costly, as expensive, and as invested as that, and to take his time to come all the way down from wherever he was seated just to tell me hi, I really, really appreciate it because I probably would have done the same for somebody else, but, you know, for him to do that was really, I really, really appreciated that. And I called him later that night to say, that was really, really cool of you to do that.
No, nah, and it was, and thank you for saying that, but it was never a question for you. That was one of the things, like, going into the weekend, I was like, I'm going to, like, I want to meet, I was hoping I would get to meet more people. I was hoping I'd get to meet, like, Greg and Nick
and Chad and
other people. But I was like, you know, Rish and I have done a bunch of main events together. We've talked a bunch on Facebook and we've chatted. So it was really important to me to do that. There was no question to me that I was definitely going to make that happen. And like I told my wife before I left, I was like, oh, I'm going to meet my buddy Andrew down there too. And she was like, okay. she was really excited.
And then the picture happened.
Yeah. Well, that was our buddy. Your brother took the picture for us.
Oh yeah, my Smoothie King brother. My brother from my Smoothie King mother.
Yep. No, I gave him my phone. I was like, "Hey, take a quick picture of us." And I had no idea it was going to happen.
Yeah.
You're like, "Oh, it'll be funny if I'm choking you," and I'm like, "Okay."
The only thing I'm mad about looking back on it is that I had my chin up, which makes me look, you know, a little extra chunky on the side. I didn't cut my hair this weekend, so I had a rat tail going on, which I can't. Anytime I see my rat tail, I'm like, oh, you look like a fucking redneck.
Why don't you tell the truth? You knew Sting was rumored to possibly be there this weekend. That's why you grew the rat tail.
He said his favorite number was 31 after all, so you never knew what was going to happen. But I'll also say this, you know, even before Ben, I've known Greg, not as much Nick, because Nick I've been in touch with for about a year since working for the site. I've known Greg since, I want to say, 2006.
Yeah.
All the way back to Scott Keith's blog. So we knew each other well. We had talked about football for I don't even know how long. We probably spent days talking to each other cumulatively over the years.
Oh, yeah, because our teams played for the national championship and the –
you can shut the hell up now. But, But no, I mean, Greg's a great guy. He's a Bama fan, but I'm glad he didn't wear the colors because I know he would have gotten some diddling in his nose like the other guy did in the Superdome the time before that. But Greg was a really, really great guy, and it was good to meet him too because I always said, oh, man, I got to meet one of these bloggy guys once I go down to one of the shows because I never got the chance to do that.
But yeah, it was a blast, man. It's just weird that it's taken us so long to finally meet in person after all these years.
Yeah. But yeah, I got to meet Ben, and for Ben to come down from his skybox and say hello, we had really nice talk. No punches were thrown, at least.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He called me later when I was lost driving through. I probably should ask you for directions at that point, but I was just.
I was on the causeway on the way back home to Maine.
Yeah, definitely one of the highlights for me.
The big question is, how was the smoothie?
It was – the thing is, in those – I don't know if it's the same way for other chains when you go to those stadiums, but they can only do so many flavors because they don't have the same palate and they don't have mango. Like, I'm like, hey, can I have a kiwi breeze? We don't have kiwi. Okay, well, can I have, like, a mango? We don't have mango. I'm like, okay, what can I fucking have? A chocolate? Yeah, you can have chocolate. I'm like, okay, give me chocolate.
Oh, man.
Not only can you not have mango, but you're an idiot for even asking.
How dare you know our supply issues?
They were nice guys. I'm kind of overdoing it, but they just had limited supply. That's all I'll say. All
right. So you guys made your way back up. Missed a little bit of the intros. You missed the caskets or whatnot. But Greg, you were there, so that's a little bit slower. Maybe you're watching intently or whatnot, and you know, the crowd was kind of a little bit restless during it. So I'm going to start with you, Greg. Talk about your group and then your section. They count to three. The streak is over. The most surreal thing you'll ever see live, even watching, you know, was, of course, obviously, I can't even state that enough. Tell me what was going on with your group.
Well, it was interesting because I'm a huge Brock fan since he debuted, basically. Also a huge Taker fan. I thought this match would be really good. Unfortunately, the downside of having awesome segment after awesome segment after awesome segment to start the show is the crowd does get a little burnt out. And there was, I think everybody can agree, the build to this match was not good at all. They didn't make Brock look like a threat. So it was like a foregone conclusion. It was hard for anybody to get invested in the match because it was such a foregone conclusion. And it was slow and plodding. At the risk of Brock Lesnar ever listening to this podcast, I'll be very generous and say that it was not a great match. But everybody was just kind of waiting for the finishing sequence. You know, Taker always has these ultra-dramatic finishing sequences, and we were just kind of waiting for that to happen. And the match was such a foregone conclusion that nobody, at least in my section, nobody even really counted along with the third F5. Like, they actually got less effective as they went along. The first near fall was kind of effective. Second near fall, not as much. Third near fall, fall would end up being the pin, he hit the F5 and he goes for the cover. And it's like one, two, and actually Nick had already said two, and then the referee's hand hit. And for a moment, Chad Patton, I think was the referee, jumps up and like waves his arms, and then the bell rings, and no, like literally just silence. And then like a guy a few rows back says, oh, they must have screwed up. Yeah, they're going to wait. He was waving it off, but they screwed it up. They screwed up the finish or something, but they're waving it off. The match is going to continue. And then everybody's still just kind of murmuring and silent. And then they flash the 21-1 on the screen.
Yes.
And the gasp. It was like, I'll put this out of the way. Obviously, it's the most shocking thing I've ever been at as far as a live sporting event or entertainment event goes. But the gasp that went through the crowd, and then like smatterings of boos and smatterings of chants of this is BS or whatever. Nick and I look at each other, and we looked like idiots probably because we both did the Charles Robinson hands on head shocked face.
and he was dressed as Hulk Hogan.
Yes,
oh, that had nothing to do with it. Go ahead.
No, he didn't. He didn't do the mustache stroke, unfortunately. The slow contemplative mustache stroke, but we looked at each other and we looked at the ring and we looked at each other and like our jaws were agape, and Russell and Garner were stunned too, and they're not as big wrestling fans as we are, but they were stunned because they both know about the streak. But me and Nick were just like flabbergasted, and I was like, that had to be a botch. Like they're gonna call it back, they're gonna restart the match, Hogan's gonna come out. And so we start looking at the entranceway waiting for Hogan to come out and like restart it or something, and then they announce the winner of the match, Brock Lesnar, and man, it was like here you could hear a pin drop in that stadium. It was just silent, and then came the boos and the catcalls and the, you know, what the hell did we just see? And it was crazy. I've used that word twice already in this conversation, but surreal is the only word I could think of, because it felt like we were in like we were out of our bodies watching the whole thing, because it was it was such a bizarre scene. Yeah. It was such a
It was like watching a Hail Mary if the road team wins.
Exactly, which I've been present for at Troy before. It's like this. It's not even like a punch to the gut, because it didn't register until the next match what had actually happened. I think until Taker had actually walked up the aisle, it didn't really register, at least with my section, what had just happened. We were still like throwing our hands up in the air, like, what in the world? What is going on here? Is that legit? And then
yeah.
Came the anger after that, and there was a lot of anger. Like there were real quick story to actually illustrate how big of a moment it was. There was a little kid, probably about 8 years old, 7-8 years old, who was sitting in the row directly behind us, and he was awesome. He was into all the matches. He seemed to love all the wrestlers indiscriminately, whether they were faces or heels. He would try to start chants for each wrestler in the match. It was really awesome. Really enthusiastic fan. I turned around about 3 minutes after the finish, maybe 4 minutes after the finish. Brock and Heyman had already left the ring. Taker was laying there, and the little kid was crying, and his mother was consoling him, and like just bawling, just tears rolling down his face. And it was I've never been a part of anything like that before.
Well, you know, me and Ben, the reason why we kind of like subconsciously did the meetup there at that point in the entryway, because we were kind of in the same point of view, because we even talked about the match before we went our separate ways. Like, well, we know what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be Taker. He's going to win. It's going to be a slower match because Brock's got to work slower because Taker's getting older. But it might be fun. You know, I hear Taker's music, but yeah, I don't know what's happening. And it doesn't matter because they're about to have a 20-minute match and all this stuff. But I will say this. When Cena defeated Bray Wyatt and Bray Wyatt didn't go over, I did have that like sneaky idea in the back of my head, but I will never take credit that I thought he was going to win because I didn't think he was going to win. But I had that feeling that, okay, I'm starting to get a little concerned because a heel has got to win sooner or later. Because we've had baby faces win every time. So either we're going to have Daniel Bryan lose in the main event.
That's what I was more concerned about. I was more concerned about the main event.
Exactly. Maybe, just maybe, The Undertaker will lose. But I said, nah. I did a big old nah when I did that. And, you know, and the other thing is that in epic WWE-style matches, everything happens in threes. Like, obviously, one, two, three for the count. But, like, three punches make a comeback. Three finishers usually ends a match. Three reversals of finishers usually ends a match. And when he hit the third F5, I started thinking, I counted it to myself. I said, okay, that was the third one. So either this is a false finish and we're near the end, or it's the end. And then when the pinfall happens, what happened is this. Because I'm in the upper bowl, so I'm looking at the big screens because I had a bad angle. When he hits three, Undertaker kind of nudges his shoulder a little bit. And the ring, the bell does not ring continuously. It rang once. And yep. I said to myself, and I texted it to Ben. I said,
"Yep,
that was a fuck up. That was a botch."
And sure looked like it.
And then I saw the graphic, like Greg just said.
And that's what I texted back. I said, "No, they had the graphic ready. It wasn't."
And the air came out of that building. It was like a player hitting a game winning shot against a home team and just taking their throat out. And it was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And I always make fun of sports fans because I never go to sports contests. And I always make fun of them for doing the hands on head. Oh my God, I'm so shocked because I think they're trying to just portray something so that they can get on television. And then I saw myself doing it, and I realized, holy shit,
Nick was doing the same thing, man. It was. There are a few moments in wrestling that could shock me that much, but that was, I thought there was zero chance of that ever happening. So
yeah, there's awkwardness, and then there's just, oh, this sucks. I wish it was better. This was just stunning. You know, yeah. And it was even more stunning because the streak, it wasn't just that the streak ended. It was that the streak ended with a match that really was lackluster. And it really
and a build that was lackluster.
Yeah. And also, I said to myself about 15 minutes in, because I don't know if it felt the same way for Ben or for Greg, wherever they were situated, but I found myself watching the big screen a lot. You know, because sometimes your eyes just gravitate up because you can see all the action the way everyone else on television is seeing it. And about 12 minutes in, I said to myself, when he's kind of doing that spaghetti legs thing with the fists up, I said, man, The Undertaker looks really tired. And then I didn't realize it until much later. He was concussed. Early in that match, he took a bad fall on a single leg takedown.
Single leg, yeah.
Severe concussion.
Where we were sitting, we actually watched the ring most of the time. We had a great view of the ring, so we pretty much watched the ring exclusively. But so we couldn't tell how, you know, when the single leg happened, that it was anything of note. You know, it didn't really appear much to us. But I do you guys think the match would have been better if not for that concussion?
Oh yes, I think Taker would have been a little bit more on his game. Now I will say this. Against CM Punk, it was kind of like a great player who he doesn't average 25 points a game. He averages like 20 points a game. You know, it felt like The Undertaker was not all the way there for the start. Punk carried it, and then Taker kind of took hold of it at the end and said, okay, I'm finishing this off. I know where to go from here. With this one, I felt like it was an opponent where it wasn't going to be as easy, but if he was at full health and he wasn't concussed, I thought it would have been a slightly better match. I thought the spots would have been more crisp. And I think it was Brock was put in a position that he really doesn't like being in, where he has to carry the match. And he has to be safe because he's already got an injured, you know, participant.
That was the thing. Actually, the guy that was sitting behind us that was the dad of the kid, I overheard him saying to the guy next to him that it looked like Brock wasn't working like his normal aggressive style of match. It wasn't as hard. Like, we were expecting to be really hard hitting, and it really felt like Brock was pulling back on almost everything.
Agree. He looked very, very careful.
I think a couple of things happened there, and then Ben, I'll grab your thoughts on it. One, that the concussion was legit in the sense that Taker had to be led through the rest of the match. Like, he didn't know the spots then, and Brock had to tell him, so that slowed down the transitions. And two is that Taker wanted to sell that he was old and weak and vulnerable also, and while he kind of literally did it with a concussion, he was also part of the deal. You know, like when he was like dragging himself by the ropes, obviously he's not that out of shape that he couldn't possibly get to his feet. I mean, it was part of his thing too, but I do know that there was a report that it came out about, like, he had, he had blanked on, you know, the match then, and so that really kind of took some of it out of it. Ben, what were things like up on Press Row there?
It was interesting because we had, you know, similar reaction to everybody else, you know, hands on head, et cetera. But a lot of the people up in the press box, and I'd been told about this by another press guy we've met up before. He's like, hey, you know, a lot of the people up there are just going to be like local newspaper guys who are not wrestling fans. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to be reacting to all the same stuff. So when the final pin count went down and, you know, me and the guys I were with, because we were all fans, just went crazy. We had a whole row of people next to us just taking notes, not reacting at all, which was, to use Greg's word, surreal in of itself. As far as the match quality, yeah, I think it would have been a little better if Taker hadn't gotten hurt early, but I never thought it was going to be a really good match. I just, at this point, for Brock to do what Brock does, and that's go all out and be aggressive and be crazy, I don't think he could do. I think to some degree he was going to have to protect Taker no matter what,
sure,
whether he's concussed or not. And I just don't think that's conducive to how Brock has a good match right now. Like his best matches since he came back were just when, you know, when he can go out there with Punk or Cena, whoever, and just destroy them. I mean, even his match with Triple H wasn't that great, and I think part of that is because Triple H can't take that kind of abuse.
Yeah. Brock revels in chaos, and this is not a chaotic match. It was a chaotic ending, but not a chaotic match.
And he's not the same guy that he was 10 years ago when he and The Undertaker had their feud, where he was all – Brock was bumping around for a big guy, you know, flying around the ring and all that. He's not that anymore, and I think that's a good point, that Taker at this point in his career, that their styles just don't mesh.
And this is a – I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ben.
No, well, the only, go ahead, and I'll make my final point.
Well, the thing is, too, is that – and because I watched it on the Kindle late that night. I don't think it was healthy for me because I was just done watching, like, spending the entire day watching wrestling, and then I go home and watch wrestling. You know, my wife wanted to kill me. But I watched the show on the Kindle right afterwards because I really wanted to see, okay, how did this convey? And can I see myself, which I didn't. But but to be serious is that – when you watch the Taker-Brock match, I don't know if everyone else got the same message, but it really came off like Michael Cole, JBL, and Jerry Lawler were selling it as this is Taker's last chance. Like, this Taker's ripe for the taking. And in the middle of the match, when Brock's giving some punches to Taker, you can even hear Michael Cole and JBL say, why don't he just quit? There's no way he's going to win, you know? And some people would take that as, oh, they're just trying to build it up so that Undertaker wins again. But it didn't come off like that watching it live. Watching it live, you didn't get that feeling like, oh, yeah, Brock's got a chance here. Whereas if you watch it on television, they were promoting it like, oh yeah, Brock is beating the hell out of The Undertaker. It's a matter of time before he wins. Right. It didn't come off that way live.
No, not at all.
It was, though, the minute the match ended, and I turned to my friend and I said, and I still feel this way, match quality didn't matter, build-up didn't matter, like it was all erased. Like that moment was it. Like it's weird to say it salvaged it, but I mean it did, because it was such a memorable moment that I think when people talk about, you know, when they analyze the match 10 years from now, they'll be like, oh, yeah, forgettable match. But let's talk about, you know, how the streak ended. And I thought it was, you know, I thought it was a ballsy move. I thought it was great. I mean, I was like, this is great because, A, we never – this is the one guy we would have never seen it coming with.
Right.
Never.
Yeah.
No one saw this coming. If Punk had done it the year before, it would have been shocking, but you would have been like, oh, okay, I get that. I see the benefit there. Punk's an up-and-comer guy. Or even if they'd given it to, like, you know, HBK, Triple H, like, oh, yeah, it's a reward for a career well done. This is the part-time guy who, you know, does not need to be built and who's already lost so many matches since he came back, ending the streak. I thought it was genius. Like, it was so stealthy. And I don't care. I saw immediately on Twitter and everywhere else afterwards, people just, you know, being like, oh, he doesn't deserve it. He doesn't deserve this honor. And I was like, who cares? I don't give a shit about who deserves the honor. I give a shit about the fact that WWE just completely surprised everybody. I wasn't thinking about Taker or Brock. I was thinking about the larger story.
Yeah. I took my bathroom break right after. And, I mean, Greg said it, too. You've never seen so many zombified fans. Like, they really look like they saw a ghost. Like, their eyes are really wide, you know, and you can even hear them in the bathroom when you're just trying to take a piss. And they're saying, oh, who's Brock Lesnar? He couldn't make it in the UFC. You know, a lot of marks.
Geez.
And, I mean, people were really, really angry that The Undertaker lost. That was like the armchair booking.
Yeah, but to me it was just like, no, you know what? it doesn't matter, was he the right guy because he deserves his honor or whatever. He was the right guy because we didn't know it was going to happen. And that made for an incredible moment that we never saw coming.
That's very true. And, like, I'm one of those guys that personally I don't think the streak ever should have ended. Like, I think that should have been Taker's – that I think that should have been Taker's legacy because he never had a long title reign, really.
Right, and I would have been fine with that.
But if it was going to happen, I'm glad I was there for it. That's all I can say because it was it was like nothing I've ever been a part of.
We were there, hands on head. We were there.
Yeah. And another quick story. Nick and I have a mutual friend who was also in the Dome in a totally different section. He is the world's biggest Brock Lesnar fan. His favorite wrestler, has supported him from day one, supported him through the UFC, buys all of his T-shirts, everything he can. So when the stadium went silent, he was there with a buddy of his. His buddy said that this dude was he literally lost his voice. He was screaming so loud. So I was really happy. Honestly, like it was really emotional when I saw him after the show. Like I was really happy for him to see like his favorite guy that he supported all these years pull off this match that no one thought he would and be the guy to finally end the streak. It was really really cool for him.
Yeah, no doubt. So let me ask you guys, did Undertaker get a standing ovation?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been trying to correct it. Chad told me the same thing, and it didn't come across great at home with that. And so a lot of people are like, oh, he tried to milk it, and it didn't happen, and whatever.
It happened live, and I actually watched the clips of that you're talking about, and I don't that's one of the very few instances of WWE production screwing it up, because I don't think that they've adequately captured it.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
The ringside people weren't doing it, but the people in our section and certainly everybody that I could see was giving him a standing O.
And the other thing is there was a brief delay just because people were still in shock. It wasn't like an immediate standing ovation. It was, oh, okay, the gravity just sunk in, like, wow, this guy's walking off. He wasn't milking it. No.
I don't agree with that at all. There were two reasons. Number one, everybody was already standing when the pinfall happened.
Yep.
So they were just clapping after already standing because they knew the finish to the streak had already occurred. Number two, Taker, obviously, because it's a long, long entryway, it took him a little longer to get out of the ring and walk. So when he did it, I mean, there were some kind of like waves and channels where some people would do the clap and then sit, and then some other people would stand up and do it. It was kind of happening. It wasn't always unanimous from section to section, but believe you me, when he walked away with that now immortal image of him walking out with no music and you know, as the loser at WrestleMania for the first time ever, there was a loud, loud, unanimous applause for the Undertaker.
And the thank you Taker chant as well.
Yeah, trending worldwide.
Yeah, it was, and also, I mean, for people saying he's milking the reaction, he also had a concussion, so, you know,
this is true.
Let's cut him a bit of a break.
I would agree. So let me backtrack on one thing here, because I did skip the match. So who here sang along to "He's Got the Whole World in His Hands"?
Right here. We did.
I didn't know what they were singing.
It was hard to pick up on the live feed, too, a little bit.
Yeah, I couldn't hear it from where I was. I just saw people swaying.
That's what I
sang along. Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't know what side Greg was on, but I will say this, because it's just the way crowds are trained because of the way the television is set up. All the camera work is on one section of the floor. Everything. It's all in a big black guarded up section. So everybody knows where the camera side is. It's not even hidden. So that section of the crowd is really overactive. I mean, they are constantly going all the time because they know they're on camera all the time. Our side was the other side, right behind the camera. So, you know, there were people kind of moving about and doing all their cheering and stuff like normal, but they weren't nearly as active as the people that knew they were on camera front row. So, you know, they were doing the wave. And a lot of the other sides of the crowd were kind of like, I don't know what they're doing there, but I'll just let them be, you know.
Gotcha. And also in that section that was on the hard camera was on was guys right out of Place in Your Heart there, Greg. You see all those guys dressed as Sting?
No, I didn't actually.
You'll see that on the replay. They must have been pretty disappointed.
It didn't happen at WrestleMania, but at Raw there was a very loud "We Want Sting" chant in between the commercial breaks, but yeah, I didn't hear any of
it. It was, you know, the chanting was definitely Raw, and there was actually a couple more guys at Raw dressed up. I remember seeing some people at Mania, but actually, we'll get to Raw in a moment.
Were they dressed up as Crow Sting or Surfer Sting?
Crow Sting for Raw.
Yeah. I will say this. There was two things that definitely, for sure, that the crowd did not play the cameras for. It was unanimous. One was Cesaro, and the other one was Yes. I mean, that was, I mean, I guess we'll get to one of those matches, but when the finish came down on either of those matches, I mean, the crowd went ballistic.
Cesaro was real, real close to being as over as Daniel.
Oh, it was so loud. I had to plug my ears. It was so loud.
Wow. Well, and seeing Bray Wyatt when they were doing the swaying and the singing, seeing just the big grin on his face running up and down the apron as the crowd was swaying to his music and stuff, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and the two musical performances were excellent. Some of these musical band performances stink. Like, even Living Color, I was like, that was kind of shitty. But I will say this, for Rev Theory and whatever the name of the band is that plays Bray Wyatt.
I was going to say, does anyone know the name of the band that plays Bray Wyatt?
I don't know their name. I don't even know the name of the song. It's not really a name that really has anything to do with the lyrics, but at least that I know of. But the song that they played with the voodoo dancer, they really did a good job singing that. And I will say this, I never thought I would like Randy Orton's theme, but Rev Theory really fucking rocked it on that song.
And as somebody that has always liked that song because it fits his character, I agree. They did a great job.
Yeah.
Nice. So let's get to the main event then.
All right, hold on a second.
Go ahead.
I got to stop. Because on the PTB podcast, I know they went right over this, and as the defender of the Divas.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Gotta
step
in here for
a second. I did want to say, let me set you up with this, too. I want to say that there is no worse spot to have to go on than after the Undertaker's streak is ended.
Yeah. Yeah. This is what I said to the guys sitting next to me. I said, those girls just got sent out there to die.
Yeah, like, they were literally slaughter
for their death. And, like, this is my perception from up in the skybox. I thought the crowd was just going to be booing the whole match. And they managed to get a couple pops. Like, it was not, you know, consistent interest, but, like, it was basically a spot fest, as much as the Divas can do a spot fest. And I was just like, holy shit, like, they're being cool under pressure. They're in the worst possible spot probably in WrestleMania history.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
This is literally the worst spot to be in. They went out there and they busted their asses. They got over to some extent as much as he could. The crowd was dead, but I thought that Baird mention. I know it was just awesome.
Yeah, it was a far cry. It was definitely a lot better than the Divas matches that Nick and I saw at 24 and 28 and 27. It was solid stuff. And AJ, as always seems to be the case, got a really good pop, even though she's a heel. So.
Yeah, she got a great pop, and I thought after the match did a good job.
My theory on that, Ben, is that they got cut. Their Divas match got cut last year, and I think that all the girls got their chance, and I mean, albeit in a really bad spot, it's wedged between the main event and the Undertaker's streak ending, but they decided, okay, we're gonna rehearse the hell out of this match, and we're gonna make it work, and we're gonna make people at least remember something. So the Bellas did a really, really cool double suicide dive that I really didn't expect.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't expect that at all.
And they had the workhorse in Tamina, and Natalya got a little discus clothesline off of a reversal. It had a decent flow to it, even though it was just full of girls. But it wasn't awful. It wasn't like, please let me turn my head away.
And I think they did a good job of, like, letting the so-called workers in the division, AJ, Natalya, et cetera, kind of do their thing and keeping the kind of non-workers like Layla out of it.
And I did like the fact that I was saying, I was like, oh, they're all doing their finishers, except no one knows what their finishers are because they never get to hit finishers.
Right.
And you know what I said?
But it was like a chain of finishers.
And you know what I said to myself, Brad? I said to myself, okay, if that was probably the second worst or worst match on this show, this is a really awesome show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyways, I noticed when the guys talked about it on Monday, they just said, we'll just skip the Divas match and go straight to the main event. So
I'm glad you stopped me. That was my own fault, because I definitely wanted to. Because I know that you and I were talking, and I had some issues with the booking at first, but I actually rewatched it. And to your guys' point, like, well, what do you do when the crowd's dead like that? Well, you have well-choreographed spots like the triple suplex and the dives to the outside, which works. And that's the storyline reason that no one could come in and break up any submissions, because they were knocked out from the dive. And so, you know, on second watch, I thought that, you know, they definitely – that exceeded expectations.
And one cool thing that I'm not sure – one cool thing that I'm not sure if they picked up on the cameras that we saw was that when AJ got the Black Widow on Naomi, she actually made Naomi tap, like, physically.
Yeah,
we were – that was actually Naomi screwed that up, and that that may have led to Paige winning
the
title.
She tapped the wrong hand.
AJ was supposed to tap her hand, and she did, but then Naomi tapped her other hand on her by herself at the same time, and that blew it.
Not only am I tapping out, the other person is making me tap out.
Like, it was a unique finish. Like, oh wow, she used her hand, and the ref saw it, and like, you know, AJ did it to her. Like, that's really cool. But when you watch the replay, like, man, she totally fucked that up. So,
but I will disagree lightly on this, is that I don't, even though the Divas were in a really tough spot, I don't think they were in the toughest spot. I thought the toughest spot was the Shield having a really, really quick squash match after an hour of absolute bliss with Rock, Austin, and Hogan, and Triple H and Daniel Bryan having one of the best matches I've ever seen.
Yeah,
I disagree, man. The Shield's super over. They just turned face. They were going to be fine no matter what.
I think that
Divas generally get booed no matter what in this type of situation. Yeah. And the Undertaker streak just ended. They were definitely in a tougher spot.
I will say this, though. Did you guys – it felt to me like the Shield did not get as big a pop as I thought they were.
Yeah,
When they came out, it felt like the crowd was dead for that whole match.
That was a victim of crowd fatigue. I thought they were really tired for just a little bit, and then they got their second gear going into Cena Wyatt.
Well, and I think they booked that Shield match right then, because if they do a heel control segment there, the crowd would have been – deader than dead.
Especially with those guys. Like, that match was exactly what it needed to be. Because
I agree 100%.
But who's going to buy those guys as a threat?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Poor
Billy Gunn, the guy busted his lung, I think, in the middle of the
match. Roman Reigns is a beast. I love that dude.
So we got through the Divas. Let's hit up the main event now. Ben, let's start with you on the main event. We got... your whole thoughts, including when Triple H came out and kind of the crowd turning towards that, was it as captivating in person as it was watching at home?
Oh, absolutely. They paced it perfectly. Just the fact that, you know, it was you didn't go more than 5 or 6 minutes without something happening that made you think, oh, this could be the turning point. Like, whether it was Triple H and Stephanie coming out, whether it was Batista hitting the Batista bomb, whether it was that crazy table spot, which really looked like I got to give him credit. I did not know if Daniel Bryan was legitimately hurt or not. Like, when they were wheeling on the stretcher, I was like 90% sure, like, oh yeah, this is part of the act. But there was that little bit of doubt. Like, that was
a nasty, nasty bump.
Yeah. And kudos to Orton for getting up after
Jesus Christ.
He got cut really bad on the monitor. Cool.
Yeah, I thought Orton had broken his back. Like, honestly, when he landed on that monitor, like, lower back first, which is, like, the worst spot to land in, I was like – Nick was freaking out because of Daniel Bryan, and I was like, I think Bryan's fine, but Orton – like, I don't know if Orton's going to be able to get up.
I'll tell you what.
And the crowd knew it because you could see the blood on the screen. Right. You could see, oh, well, he fucked himself up bad.
Yeah. And actually, go ahead.
No, go.
I was gonna say when you watch the match back, it's Batista's fault. When he clears the table, he just drops the monitor and leaves.
Oh, I didn't
realize
that.
Oh yeah.
And also, I don't know if Batista gets fined for this. I don't know how it works, but he gave him a blatant shot to the head with the monitor, which is a no-no. You're not supposed to do that, but whatever. It's WrestleMania, I guess. Yeah. You know, let a sleeping dog lie, I guess.
Yeah, I do know that. One of the guys I was with was convinced that, especially when Triple H came out, and when the odds were so overwhelming, at some point Punk was going to come out. And
a lot of people thought that.
I think a lot of people thought that. At the end of the day, I think Bryan needed to win on his own. That was important. I don't think it would have resonated as much otherwise.
You know, Ben, I agree with that. And when I saw the run-in, I got a little nervous because the match was not – the match was going okay. It was kind of what I would call cookie cutter. And then he puts the yes lock in on Orton, and then you see Triple H coming in and his Rocky Balboa jumpsuit.
That was
with Stephanie. And I said to myself, oh no, this is the finish, and it does, and the match is not as good as I thought. And then I looked at my cell phone clock, and it was about it was about 9:22, and I said, oh wait a minute, they're just clearing all this out of the way so they get the real finish. And I said, oh, now we're getting really good. And I felt like the match really picked up when Triple H interfered.
Absolutely.
And then Scott Armstrong comes, and then he does the suicide dive on Scott Armstrong and Triple H, and then he does a roll-up on Batista, and Orton breaks it up, and then it starts to really pick up steam. And I felt that two false finishes that they had with Batista and Orton getting pinfalls, I almost thought, this is it. This is the finish.
Oh, my God. The RKO on Batista was a brilliant near fall. Yeah. I was like, oh, my God, that's going to be it.
It month after month.
But yeah, it's like I said from the beginning, it's like every time it got a little bit slow, they did something to up the stakes. And it was just so well built. I don't think it's I don't know if this match has gotten the credit that it deserved because I think a lot of people focused on the Brian Triple H match, but this triple though, it was good, man.
I think they're definitely comparable. I mean, certainly in the 4-star around range and even maybe a little bit more, but to your point, my biggest takeaway was, I mean, you're talking like Backlash 2000 level of booking a main event to almost nearly flawless in that sense.
Yeah, it's like the storytelling, like the wrestling was good, the storytelling was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Go ahead.
It was kind of like when Eddie beat Brock. What happened is that Goldberg interferes, but it wasn't the finish. It didn't lead to the finish. It was just something to kind of add to it. And then Brock comes back, gets it on Eddie, but Eddie reverses it and wins it. Goldberg was interfered in the match, but he wasn't the reason why Eddie won the match, which made the match more valuable.
Right.
And I felt like that's what they did here. They protected it so that, look, we can get this schmoz out the way, and then we can really get into the meat and potatoes of this match where the crowd is just – we're just getting the crowd completely jived to watch the finish.
I'm a huge continuity nerd in wrestling, and it's something that WWE has the advantage of over really almost any other promotion in the world, is they specialize in this long form storytelling when they want to and when they do it right. And all these callbacks during the match, callbacks to Randy Orton and Daniel Bryan's previous matches, callbacks to Scott Armstrong, who has been gone since October.
Yes.
Triple H and Stephanie, the sledgehammer. And for a guy that gets so much crap and a lot of it deserved over the years, and he's never been my favorite wrestler, but I got to give him props. Triple H was outstanding Sunday night. To me, other than Daniel Bryan, he was the MVP of the show.
I challenged him on Main Event to produce a good match because I hadn't seen him do one in a very long time, but he pulled it off. That was a really terrific match. Now, I don't know how much of it was Bryan saying, okay, do this to me, but Triple H did more than his share.
He deserves a lot of credit. His his moveset with work on the shoulder. I thought that from a booking standpoint, just flashing back to his match, like you'll notice that he didn't kick out of any Bryan's finishers, so it meant more later when Orton did.
As an all Japan nerd, when he did the release Tiger Suplex, amazing. I lost it. I was like, oh, wait a minute. This is not normal. This is like Ring of Honor stuff.
When is the last time that you saw Triple H put somebody over that hard, losing cleanly in the middle of the ring, coming out, getting beaten down at ringside, dived on twice, and then knocked out with his own signature weapon? And taking a hell of a bump off of it, too.
Not since Batista.
I was
going to
say Batista. And then you think about when in a one-on-one non-gimmick match did he perform that well?
Opener, is that – I mean, Bret Owen is – I mean, that will never be top. But that's probably the second-best opener maybe in wrestling history.
Well, that was one of the first things I said was I think I tweeted it was like we had just done the 5-count for best openers, and I was like, well, fuck.
That list is completely
obsolete now.
The feeling like during the main event, like I agree with you guys, it started out slow and the crowd was having a hard time getting into it because of Undertaker, the Undertaker stuff, the leftover Undertaker stuff.
Yeah.
And they got – when Triple H interfered, you could tell the switch went off. The yeses went up. The noes went up. The boos went up for Triple H. And he got the heat on the match. And then, to their credit, Orton and Batista more than carried their end, particularly Orton.
Oh, yes.
Who I think Orton at this point is by far the most underrated performer in the business.
I wanted to
say
that.
He is incredible.
I wanted to say that too, Greg. I thought Batista did fine. I thought he did what he was capable. I thought Randy Orton was terrific. And I really kill Randy Orton for not delivering big time in big matches because he's had a tendency to struggle. But in this one, no siree, Bob. He had his work shoes on and he worked his ass off.
He is a heel. With capital letters, a heel. He does not go out and try to be cute or anything like that. He's milking the crowd to get as many boos as he can and to get as much sympathy on the opponent as possible. He was outstanding.
I'll say this, Brad. I've seen Orton a couple of times, but this time watching Orton in the main event, he's one of the best at working the crowd like live. He's really good at kind of extending his performance so that everybody can get into it. I think he's one of the better ones in that regard than others.
He strikes me as like the inverse of Sting. And the reason I say that is Sting to me has the best babyface timing that I've ever seen in terms of knowing when to time his comebacks and everything. Orton knows the right time as a heel to throw in a pose randomly. Even me, who I like Orton, he was getting my ire because like Brian's sitting there suffering and then Orton just pauses in the middle of a move and does the pose and I'm like, oh, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, and just like Sting, he rarely makes a mistake.
Yeah.
Like whatever he's got planned, it's gonna happen, and it's probably gonna go down without too much of a hitch. So if it's good, it's gonna be really good. If it's booked badly, it's probably gonna be bad. But this one was good for sure.
Yep.
All right.
I gotta give credit to my buddy Ryan who was sitting next to me on a different topic. Is that when Stephanie came out at the beginning of the night, we were all talking about her outfit, and that was kind of a weird outfit. And he says, she's wearing shorts instead of long pants or a dress. That means she's taking a bump tonight.
Hmm.
I was like, oh. He's like, because in a dress she wouldn't be able to do it. And pants, he's like, trust me, she's taking a bump tonight. And I was like, all right.
That was so cool because of all the characters in WWE, she's the one that most needed to take a bump because
It was more of an ancillary bump, right?
That's true.
Yeah, but that's fine.
She doesn't need to take Daniel Bryan full on in 2000.
Yeah, I didn't want to take a knee or anything. But like, she hasn't gotten any comeuppance the whole time that she's been a heel from anybody, and so it was awesome. It was a really cathartic moment to see her and Triple H and Scott Armstrong get their comeuppance all at the same time.
And she eats a lot of crap for her character, and a lot of ways she deserves it. But I thought she was great as a manager.
She was amazing.
Yeah.
Good.
You'll never win, Daniel. You can't beat him. I was like, oh, you little bitch. I can't wait to prove you wrong.
She's a great heel.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a true sign of it. Andrew Reich's rage and Jordan Duncan is not a fan either. So let's go to final thoughts on the Mania crowd and kind of your experience in general. You guys get confetti, you walk out, everybody's happy, everybody's high-fiving. Greg, how was it up there with you guys?
The only live wrestling experience that's ever compared to it in terms of the euphoric feeling of being part of a crowd and leaving was 28, and I have a hard time comparing the two because they were different. Rock and Cena was more like a combative crowd because you had your hardcore Rock fans, your hardcore Cena fans, and that's something that I don't think ever even came across on the video because of the open-air stadium, but that crowd was electric, and it was even combative leaving the arena.
Yeah.
So that was one thing, but the Daniel Bryan thing was everybody united. And I've never been a part of that where everybody in the crowd, other than, you know, when The Rock pinned Cena, it was like 90-10 Rock at that point at the stadium. But this was like, you know, 99-1. And it was everybody leaving the arena, yesing in the parking lot, yesing on the way to their cars. Just a euphoric feeling that there was a huge – I told Nick there was a huge energy dump for me when I left the Dome because it felt like we had exerted ourselves so much during the show. But everybody was just there was two groups of people. There was the people that were bitching about The Undertaker's loss, and I don't begrudge them that. I can understand that. But then there were the people like us that were just euphoric. And as we got closer and closer back to Bourbon Street and everything, people were stopping talking about the negative stuff, and all they were talking about was – we just watched Daniel Bryan win the title. How awesome is that?
Mm-hmm. Cool. Ben, how about you?
Going out to Bourbon Street afterwards, it was kind of more this, just to kind of pick up where Greg left off. And I went back to my hotel, hung out there for a little while, and then went out to Bourbon Street with some of my friends and, you know, met up with some guys. We met up with Daniels. And it was a weird group. We met up with Daniels, Kaz, the Hurricane, Joey Ryan, and SoCal Val. So it was an odd mix, to say the least. And they were getting, you know, photo sig and everything. But just the crowd on Bourbon Street, man, it was like, you know, I've never been there ever. But just all wrestling fans, all T-shirts, all everything, and just chants up and down the blocks. The police just looking completely befuddled. Just like circles forming of fans doing like these huge chants, people running in the middle. It was amazing. It was completely different than any other. And I was there for I was there live for 14 when Austin won. Mm-hmm. And this felt completely different. Like the sheer enthusiasm, just the sheer joy. When Austin won, there was like a satisfaction. With this, there was a joy. It was really incredible. And just kudos to the crowd all night, man. That was if it wasn't the best crowd I've ever been a part of, it was definitely up there. It was a really incredible atmosphere. Incredible show to be at. You know, I'm going to have to probably take a little time and a little divide and may never be able to, you know, objectively rank where it sits mm-hmm. on the all-time list, just, you know, for virtue of having been there. But it felt like there wasn't a dull moment, and it was – the crowd was a big part of that.
Now Nick went out on Bourbon Street later that night when I was back at the hotel. And did you see the group of people that started doing the Cesaro fist pump to his theme song? The da 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 da.
I think I did briefly. Yeah,
they did it on the Monday Night Raw.
Because Nick came back to the hotel and he said, or the next morning he said that was going to be the new Fandangoing for this year. And
there were people Fandangoing on Bourbon Street for sure. There was a large contingent, but yeah,
Chad. You should have said hello.
Yeah, nah, I was pissed. I was pissed. He made me write the all-time WrestleMania card by myself.
All right, Reesh, wrap us up on WrestleMania here.
The confetti shoots out, and I will say that there was so much confetti that you could barely see the ring. You know, that's how much confetti I could see from my angle. But, you know, I got to see a guy, you know, because I'm partial to Daniel Bryan, and, you know, watching his little special a couple days later really sealed it for me, you know, in a lot of ways. To I watched him all the way to when he started at Ring of Honor, when he was wrestling Paul London in the matches that were like an hour and a half long. And to watch him get all the way to this point where not only was he main eventing WrestleMania, but he was in the main event of WrestleMania in my hometown, in the most important structure of our state, to become a main eventer, to become immortalized, just like Hulk Hogan, just like Steve Austin, just like The Rock, just like John Cena, and become the man, it almost became emotional for me. And when I was watching the special on the network, which I really, really recommend, it's Journey to WrestleMania, Daniel Bryan, and he's training in the New Orleans Athletic Club, which is right off of North Rampart on the corner of Canal. And when I was a kid, because my dad would always train there. And they had a little wrestling ring. If anybody's watching, there's a little wrestling ring or MMA ring where he's doing elbows and Muay Thai kicks to a punch bag. And he does the yes chant there, right in there in that canvas. And I remember thinking to myself, because I was a little kid, and I used to try to do like body slams and drop kicks, just like Shawn Michaels or Sting as a little kid back in the 90s. And to see Daniel Bryan standing in the same spot, grown up, a main eventer saying yes. I mean, I almost choked up. It was so awesome to watch that guy grow into what he's become. And, you know, so I'm already like in euphoria, like Greg said, walking out. You know, you have to take a long, long walkway all the way down back to the ground floor, depending on where you're seated. And I was seated so high that it took a long time to get down. So I'm walking poitras, just like Greg and Ben. And it's just madness. Everyone is saying yes. Everybody was talking about – it wasn't like everybody was talking about the streak it wasn't like everybody was talking about the Silverdome mess up or anybody was talking about John Cena sucks or anything like that. It was all Daniel Bryan. All they were saying was yes, 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 yes. And you had to walk that long. I had to walk a pretty long ways all the way up Carondelet, right by Bourbon Street to get to my car. And it was yes, 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 all the way walking down. And I remembered, I don't know if Ben and Greg remember this, but I remembered there was supposed to be rain that night, but there was no rain. So there was a lot of trapped wind. And the trapped wind created these huge, 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 huge gusts of wind. And I remember thinking to myself, because the gust started coming at me when I was walking across the street, and maybe I'm waxing poetic here, but it almost felt like it almost felt like the winds of change. I remember thinking, it feels like something's different in the WWE now after this. Things are going to be different. And I don't know if it came off that way, but it definitely came off for me that, you know, things have changed, and they've changed for the better.
All right.
But overall, top 5, top 10 WrestleMania. And I am not afraid of saying that.
It'll be interesting to see where it sits then when we kind of revisit it next year. So,
well, I'm sure Justin's going to put 8 above it anyway. So.
Oof. Well, we'll cross that bridge later.
Yeah,
but
this was not a two-match
we'll
show.
That.
On that note, I want to thank all three of you guys for taking us through your weekend trip all the way up to Daniel Bryan's coronation. And so thanks again, you know, for Ben Morse, Andrew Reich, and Greg Phelps. Brad Woodling, and we'll talk to you guys again real soon. Thanks, boys.
Hey, appreciate it.
You know, and Reach, when you were telling your story about talking to the cosplayers of the Wyatts, I was trying to, when you like, and then he leaned in, and I was trying to jump in to say, Reach, it's me, Chad! But I missed it, and then I missed the window, and I'm like, man, I'm never going to get that back.